Now, I'm not typically one to put on aftershave unless I'm really going to some place where, you know, I gotta look impressive or something. But, you know, sometimes people use perfumes and preferably deodorant. I'll have to admit, I don't use deodorant if I'm going out and work in the yard. Okay, I will admit, I don't use it every day. But I did use it today. You can come and check. Anyone? Anyone? Okay, I didn't think so. Perfumes are a part of human existence. Archaeologists have discovered remains of perfumes in ancient Egyptian tombs. It goes back many, many millennia. Human beings have discovered that they like the smells of nature, of certain spices, and of flowers and things like that. We live in a time when you can get a scent of just about anything you want. In fact, have you read about the machines that they're trying to figure out how you can send a scent through email or over the internet? Wouldn't that be amazing? Not if you're a teenage boy, but in most situations, that would be quite interesting. You could ask the restaurant to email you the smell of the dinner before you get there so you know which option you would like. Wouldn't that be amazing? That would be awesome. The story today is all about perfume and the cost of that perfume and what it meant for a certain lady. This story, verses 1 through 11, takes place on Wednesday of Holy Week. Jesus had been going to the temple and teaching there. We've looked at some of his teachings the last few weeks. And now there is going to be a change of scene in this story. The key question that I want you to think about this morning is this. Do we calculate or limit our devotion to Jesus? Do we calculate, do we limit somehow how much we're going to give to Jesus in our devotion to him? There are three different responses that we find in this passage to the person of Jesus. The first one, in verses 1 and 2, is that there are people who wanted to kill him. Let's look at that. Now the Passover and festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away, and the chief priests and the teachers of the law were scheming to arrest Jesus secretly and kill him. But not during the festival, they said, or people may riot. We find out who the key characters are here, the chief priests and the teachers of the law. These were basically the leaders of the Jewish people, what were also known as the members of the Sanhedrin. This would be like the ruling people, the council, those who made the decisions for the Jewish people. And they had seen what Jesus had been doing in the temple over the last few days. In fact, this was nothing new. Jesus had been in town many times over the past couple of years, and they had finally reached the point where they were scheming how to get rid of Jesus. The problem was, though, that they knew that if they went and arrested Jesus when he was teaching in the temple courts, there would be a riot because people liked Jesus. They liked what he was teaching. They liked what he was doing. And they thought he was the king who had come to bring a new day for Israel. It's interesting what they do. In fact, we see it almost every day in the news in our time. When was the last time that something like this happened? Well, so-and-so said something or did something that they shouldn't have done. And when Twitter lighted up, they went and apologized for what they had done. You hear that this week? I'm not sure about this week, but the last week, some actor, some politician will say something or do something, and then a whole bunch of people react. And if you don't know what Twitter is, that's the little thing where you can send little quick messages. sorry if it's a little past some of us, but you know, you can look it up. Twitter or Facebook is another big one. You know, and all these people respond to what this person has said or done, and the person backtracks and apologizes, assuming that, oh, if I just apologize, it'll be all right. It's the same phenomenon today as was happening back then. Basically, here's the question. What keeps evil in check? It's the crowd, basically. Once Twitter lights up, people back off. There is a total lack of integrity. People do not stand by their word. I just read one just a couple days ago. The CEO of Mozilla Firefox, that's the internet browser, had said something in support of Proposition 8 in California. That was the one that was against gay marriage. He said something in support of that proposition, in support of traditional marriage. Well, people didn't like that, and he resigned, lost his job because of that. There's no integrity today in so many places. I always ask, well, why do people do it in the first place? Why'd they say it in the first place? Maybe they're trying to push an agenda, just try to move the standard down a little bit further. The motive is to please people, to go as far as you can until people respond. This is what these leaders were doing. They were trying to get rid of Jesus, but the only thing that was keeping them from doing that is the people who liked Jesus. They did not want to create a riot. Part of the problem was this was the holiest time of the year for Jews. They came from all over the Roman Empire to Jerusalem. The Romans knew that as well. And so they had extra guards posted. And if there was any uprising by the Jews, the Romans were ready to squash it. And the Jewish leaders knew that. They were trying to keep the peace. But at the same time, they were trying to get rid of Jesus. This sets up for the next two responses that we see recorded in Mark. Specifically, the betrayal of Jesus. Why did Judas need to betray Jesus? Couldn't the officials just gone and arrested Jesus? Couldn't they have followed him perhaps? Well, part of it is that Jesus and his disciples were going and hiding at nighttime in the Garden of Gethsemane. I want to look at that passage next week. Jesus slipped away and they couldn't arrest him. Many people were present in Jerusalem and it was a little hard to track him down perhaps. They needed someone on the inside to let them know where to go and how to arrest Jesus. The Jewish leaders could not catch Jesus because of his popularity and because he slipped away. The second response is one of worshiping Jesus. While he was in Bethany, reclining at a table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, "Why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor." And they rebuked her harshly. "Leave her alone," Jesus said. "Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you. You can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Truly I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." Well, who is the main character here? In Mark's gospel, she's just simply called a woman. John's gospel, chapter 12, gives us many more details of this passage. Mark, as he wrote his gospel, just kind of condenses things. And he's trying to make a point. John elaborates on the details. In John's gospel, we find out that this is Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus. Lazarus was the one that died and Jesus raised from the dead. recorded in John chapter 11. What do we know about Mary? We know a few things. First of all, let me say that there's lots of Marys in the New Testament. Sometimes this Mary is confused with Mary of Magdala, also known as Mary Magdalene. That Magdala is much further north in the Sea of Galilee. This is Mary of Bethany. Bethany was only 2 miles from Jerusalem, basically a suburb. In Luke chapter 10, we find a story where Jesus went to their home there in the Bethany area and had dinner there. Martha was the kind of person who was very busy, and she was in the kitchen cooking. And Mary, however, was out listening to Jesus, what he was saying, and spending time with Jesus. Well, Martha, remember the story? Martha comes in, "Mary, come help me. Let's get ready for supper." And Mary says, "Hey, I want to listen to Jesus. This is a once-in-a-lifetime chance to have him in our home. I'm going to dwell in the presence of my Lord." Well, Jesus says, "Martha, you've got it all wrong. You know, that'll take care of itself. This is an important time." And then we find out about Mary's attitude towards Jesus in John chapter 11, where her brother Lazarus dies, and Mary's very sad and weeping. And in that story, Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, and Mary is overwhelmed in thankfulness for what Jesus had done. This story in Mark 14 and John 12, where she anoints Jesus with this very expensive perfume, was probably a response to what Jesus had done for her brother Lazarus. She is responding to the miracle and who Jesus is to her. It really is a sign of love and appreciation. This takes place in a village not too far from Jerusalem, just maybe a half hour to an hour's walk on the eastern side of the Mount of Olives. Jesus had been spending his time at night on the Mount of Olives or in that vicinity. The story takes place in the home of Simon the leper. We don't know much about him, but just from his description, he had a home big enough to host this, but yet he's called the leper. That means at some time he had some kind of skin disease because he could not have it at this point, otherwise people would not have been able to fellowship with him. He had to stay away from lepers who are ceremonially unclean. Why would he host this event for Jesus at his home? Probably because Jesus had healed him at some point. He was a former leper. This may have been the opportunity for him to show his appreciation to Jesus. And then there's some other characters in this story. Verse 4 says, some of those present were indignant, they were upset with this woman for wasting this expensive perfume. John tells us that Judas was at the top of the list of this. These are the insiders. These are Jesus' disciples. They should have known better. But really, we can't criticize them too much. It seems like they have a good motive, don't they? Well, let's look a little bit further at their complaint. Their complaint is really two parts. On the one part, they said that the perfume was too expensive. It was worth a whole year's worth of wages. I don't know what the average wages are in the United States. Let's say $20,000 or $30,000, if we're lucky these days. I don't know. Maybe more. You know, that's a lot of money. Can you imagine spending that kind of money on a bottle of perfume? Now, there are some out there that's worth that much. 300 denarii. A denarii was about how much a person earned working in that day and age. The perfume was called spikenard. It was an aromatic oil extracted from the root of an Indian herb. That means it was imported. Very expensive. This may have been Mary's dowry. This was a family heirloom. It was what she could be married with someday. That adds some very significant factors to this story. It was something of very sentimental value. She did not pour out the oil and keep the jar. She smashed the jar, the scriptures tell us, which means that she would never use that perfume again. Basically, she was giving her future to Jesus. All she had, this was hers. This was her family heirloom. This was probably her dowry. She was giving her whole life, basically, to Jesus. The other complaint the disciples had was that they should sell the money and give it, or sell the perfume and give the money to the poor. Well, their motive seems worthy enough. Jesus did many things for the poor. And the poor were some of the main themes of his preaching. He talked a lot about taking care of the poor and those who needed assistance. Their condemnation of this woman, Mary, showed that they had total disregard for the sacrifice that she was giving. How would you have felt if you were being criticized by the disciples? If you were Mary at this situation, and you have these close followers, the apostles, the leaders, criticizing you for giving yourself to Jesus. People have a hard time understanding total commitment to Jesus. It's not a problem for the world to understand things like wealth, materialism, immorality, and sin. You know, they understand all that stuff. But they can't understand how someone would give their whole life to Jesus. It doesn't make sense to them. They can't figure it out. What matters to Jesus is the motive of our heart, not acts of piety. Jesus said, the poor will always be there. You can go take care of them. That's what I want you to do. And he preached about that this week as well, but we probably won't have time for that one. But he said, yes, you go take care of the poor. They'll always be there, but this is a special time. The woman's gift shows how important Jesus was to her. What does it take to worship Jesus like Mary? One thing is giving yourself totally to God. Laying yourself before Him. Here I am, Lord. Take me. Use me. I am yours. Second is humility. Notice what she used as a towel to wipe the perfume on Jesus' feet. She used her hair. Does it say that in? It doesn't say that in Mark, but it says that in John. Should look at John's passage. But anyway, if we look at John's passage, we can see that what she used to wipe the perfume on Jesus' feet was her very hair. A sign of total humility and commitment to Jesus Christ. When the perfume was poured out, what effect did it have? Can you imagine a perfume worth that much money? What kind of odor it would put out? Typically, something like that, you just put a little drop and it would fill the whole room. Can you imagine a whole jar of expensive alabaster perfume poured out? What kind of effects that would have? Giving our all to Jesus like that radiates out and begins to affect the people around us. Do you want to make a difference in your marriage, in your family, among your friends, in your workplace? The answer is to give yourself totally to Jesus, and you will begin to radiate out His love to those around you. Jesus said that what Mary did here was a preparation for His burial. The custom was first to bathe a body and to prepare it for burial. In Jesus' case, He didn't have any of that done. We do read that Nicodemus and another man prepared Jesus' body by anointing it. But Jesus' body was abused. There was not a lot of opportunity to properly prepare Him for burial. And Jesus says, what Mary is doing now is preparing me in a very special way for my death. There's a third response. Interesting that Mark, as the gospel writer, tacks this in right after this. It's obvious he wants to make a comparison for his readers. The third response is betrayal. Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priests to betray Jesus to them. They were delighted to hear this and promised to give him money. So he watched for an opportunity to hand him over. Judas, quite the character. We don't have time to get too far into who he was. But he had spent all that time with Jesus. John tells us he was the treasurer of the group. He had taken care of the needs of them. He had heard Jesus preach. He had seen the miracles. He had experienced the feedings of the 4,000, 5,000. He had witnessed people raised from the dead. He had been there the whole time. Yet something in what was happening bothered him. He just couldn't accept Jesus as Lord and Savior of his life. What a strong contrast. So we have to ask ourselves, what is Jesus worth to us? What is Jesus worth to you? For Mary, it was all she had. Her future, her dowry perhaps, a year's worth of wage. There is no way a woman like her could have gotten that on her own. It had to have been given to her in some way or another. For Judas, 30 pieces of silver, you know, a couple bucks. Jesus is worth that much to me, 30 pieces of silver. Two different outcomes. One, for Mary, was a life of faith that has influenced Christians throughout the ages. Jesus said, what she has done will be remembered and preached about until he comes again. And it is. People honor what Mary has done here year after year for thousands of years. What about Judas? The life of rejection. He went out and hung himself, committed suicide. He couldn't handle what he had done. There's an old story from the days of ancient Greece about a runner who was going to enter the Olympic Games. He was known and very famous for being the fastest runner around. And his competitors knew this. And so they came to him one after another saying, I'll give you this much if you don't run the race. I'll give you this field. I'll give you this money. I'll give you this if you just stay out of the race. The winner of the race would get a laurel wreath and be able to sit next to the emperor. Well, whatever they offered him, he turned down. Money, property, whatever. To their dismay, as the games continued, someone said to him, I know how much you gave up to run in that race. And I have to ask, is the wreath of laurel more valuable than anything that they offered you? Well, he went on to win the race, and he went and sat next to the emperor and got his laurel wreath. He said, I don't run for laurel wreaths or money or possessions. I run so that I may stand beside my Lord. That's all that matters. What would you give to Jesus to show your love to him? Your time, your talent, your treasure. It doesn't matter how costly it is or how small it might be, whether other people will understand it or criticize you. Whatever it is, give it from the heart. Give yourself to the Lord and allow him to use you to influence and be a blessing to those around you.